we shouldn't go in assuming that Kim Jong-un has completely changed his tune and everything will be fine.
Vice President Pence heads to Asia and the Olympics. It's Tuesday, February 6th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a North Korean delegation arriving for the games in South Korea. Support for Japan's ruling party. A super NFL championship. A call to help children. A new type of hologram. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Vice President Mike Pence is traveling to Northeast Asia. One of his stops will be to attend the opening ceremonies of the Winter Olympic Games in South Korea. A White House official told reporters prior to Mr. Pence's departure that the United States does not want to allow the North Korean regime to hijack the messaging with their propaganda. The vice president in Tokyo and Seoul this week will seek to intensify what the U.S. administration calls the maximum pressure campaign against Pyongyang to get it to give up its nuclear weapons and ballistic missile programs. This comes at a time of engagement between the two Koreas and reports of disagreement between Washington and Seoul on how to approach the North. Not everyone agrees with the Trump administration's stand on relations with North Korea. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke about that with Alexandra Bell, the senior policy director at the Center for Arms Control and Nonproliferation.
In my mind, there are about four things that the vice president should keep in mind during his trip to Asia. First and foremost is to reassure our allies in Japan and South Korea that the U.S. commitment to their security is ironclad, despite any conflicting statements that may sometimes come out of Washington, that their safety and security is of paramount importance to the United States. The second thing would be to listen to our allies. They have thoughts and ideas about how to stabilize and improve the security conditions around them. We should be listening to them. Three, I would avoid heated rhetoric. North Korea does enough heated rhetoric and aggressive and childish taunts for everyone involved. We don't need to match that behavior. And no matter what people say, this isn't just about the vice president making stern faces for the cameras. Yes, the North Koreans may be trying to turn on the charm, but the world is not stupid. They know the North Korean nuclear and missile programs present a terrible threat to the international community, and no amount of photo ops will change that. The only thing that will change that is North Korea deciding to first freeze its missile and nuclear testing program and then to come to the negotiating table to find a solution. And finally, Pence needs to remember that he's also there to support our athletes and remember that events like the Olympics can offer an opportunity for diplomacy and dialogue.
Do you think that this unified team of both Koreas could lead to such negotiations, or is it just Kim Jong-un trying to find some good propaganda?
We should be cautiously optimistic that this unified team and the use of sports diplomacy could get us into a larger conversation about security conditions. That said, we shouldn't go in assuming that Kim Jong-un has completely changed his tune and everything will be fine. We need to be cautious, but we also need to not miss an opportunity for better dialogue.
A U.S. official said, "We've seen charm offensives by the North before, and they have not ever led anyone to sincere movement toward denuclearization. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Pyeongchang Olympics puts spotlight on North Korea. Taiwan calls on its firms not to break North Korea sanctions. Jakarta braces for floods as landslides kill two. Swiss president says Rohingya return must be voluntary. Linguistic divide posts problem for Korea Olympic hockey team." Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the VOAnews.com website. VOA Viewway Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. North Korea's ceremonial head of state is heading a delegation to visit the Winter Olympic Games in South Korea.
북한은 어제 22시 50분경
A South Korean unification ministry spokesman said Pyongyang sent notice Sunday that it will send a high-level delegation, including Kim Yong-nam, the North's president of the Presidium of the Supreme People's Assembly, and will visit for 3 days, beginning the opening day of the Olympics on Friday. The South Korean presidential Blue House said the most senior-level North Korean visit to the South since the Korean War would create various opportunities for high-level talks. A North Korean art troupe is also expected to arrive Tuesday and perform during the Olympics. But Tufts University Associate Korean Studies Professor Sung-Yoon Lee tells VOA's Victor Beatty such visits will only benefit North Korea.
Kim Yong-nam's visit to South Korea is part of North Korea's campaign to mesmerize the South Korean public into believing that North Korea means well and to advance its leverage vis-a-vis South Korea and the United States to get its adversaries to gradually de-escalate, back off, and relax prematurely, that is, sanctions against North Korea, and to buy time with which to perfect its WMD, Weapons of Mass Destruction, programs.
His trip will mark the diplomatic high point of the rapprochement that began just after New Year's Day, or actually on New Year's Day, with remarks by Kim Jong-un. Do you see this as the diplomatic high point?
No, I think the climax will come on Valentine's Day on February 14th, when the United North Korean South Korean women's ice hockey team plays Japan, the former colonial master of the Korean Peninsula. And we can see even now that South Koreans are quite enamored of the North Korean participation, the handful of North Korean athletes who are now in South Korea. And when the cheerleaders come, over 200, and singers and dancers and musicians come and perform for the South Korean public, the entire world will come to take a softer view of North Korea and reconfirm their biases against President Trump and the United States as the aggressor.
The joint North-South Korean ice hockey women's team played a warm-up match, lost to Sweden 3-1, but I think the news that came out of this was the enthusiasm of the fans chanting, "We are one," and wearing shirts with the unification flag emblazoned on the front.
Well, this is all grand theater produced by the North Koreans, of course. Kim Jong-un just may be the world's greatest showman, because all grand theater, political theater, sports pageantry really rest on glitz, the scale of the spectacle, and the ignorance of the viewer, the ignorance on the part of the audience. And for the unsuspecting viewer, all this is wonderful. We are one, the North Koreans and South Koreans. We are in charge of our own destiny. The United States is really driving a wedge between the Korean people, the Korean states, as they seek peace and reconciliation. All these unfounded and misleading images that are happening today and will go on over the next several weeks are quite dangerous. They do tremendous favor to North Korea, and these developments are detrimental to South Korea's long-term security and the alliance of the United States and South Korea.
The 90-year-old Kim Yong-nam, who is no relation with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, is the oldest member of the North Korean leadership and represented his government at the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing, also at the Winter Games in Sochi, Russia in 2014. Happening now in Asia, a Japanese military helicopter carrying two crew members crashed in southwestern Japan, ripping the top floor off of a house, setting it on fire. The defense ministry said both crew members suffered heart and lung failure. The four residents of the house were believed to have been away at the time. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. As always, we're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has welcomed Sunday's election result on the island of Okinawa, in which his Liberal Democratic Party's candidate defeated the incumbent mayor of the northern city of Nago, future site of the U.S. Fentuna Marine Air Station.
Mr.
Abe said he thought it would be hard for his candidate to win given that the incumbent mayor had been elected three times before, so he's happy with the result. The mayor, who wanted the sprawling U.S. base off of the island entirely, lost by less than 4,000 votes out of about 37,000 cast. The victory appears to put the 20-year-old base relocation plan back on track. Critics argue the base, now in a congested southwest part of the island, has resulted in high-profile crimes involving local residents and marine personnel, pollution and accidents. Former marine officer and senior research fellow at the Tokyo-based Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, Grant Newsham, tells VOA the vote outcome was important for maintaining a U.S. presence on Okinawa that dates back to World War II.
There's been a belief or a sort of an assumption by many Western observers in particular that all of Okinawa is against the U.S. military presence, against the U.S. military bases. And here you have a pro-base candidate winning in a key constituency and by a considerable amount, too. So this points out how there has always been on Okinawa a large amount of support for the U.S. military presence, if not outright support, at least tolerance of it. And that's very different than the sort of the popular belief or the image that's really been put out for many years by the Western press in particular. It highlights the reality of Okinawan society, which is a far more complex place than often admitted, and that there is a lot of support for the U.S. presence. Part of the reason here, and one needs to always pay attention, is that every year Okinawa gets about a $3 billion U.S. subsidy from Japan's central government. There's only a little over a million people on Okinawa, so $3 billion is a ton of money.
The U.S. base is located in a populated area, and there have been calls to move it to a less populated location. Grant Newsham notes it's been linked to crime, pollution, and accidents, and has been quite an irritant to residents.
That is the sort of the story that one hears from the anti-base crowd. But upon any real or honest assessment, that's just not correct. When the base was built, there was nothing around it. Japan does not have zoning laws, and people came and built near the base. It's being moved because it is in the middle of a built-up area now. Unfortunately, the option where it is being built up in northeast Okinawa called Henoko does not replace the capabilities of Futenma Air Station, which is a full-service airfield that can handle just about any kind of aircraft. It has a very long runway, and the new place is really just a very long heliport. It can really only handle helicopters, so some of the capabilities are being lost.
But Newsham also notes the importance of the base has risen as the regional influence of China has grown.
The entire Ryukyu chain, and Okinawa's right about in the middle of it, that is in play. The Chinese have, of course, declared the Senkaku Islands down towards the southern end to be Chinese territory, but they've also said that the entire Ryukyu chain is Chinese.
Grant Newsham said now more than ever, U.S. bases are seen as crucial to Japan's defense and that of the Asia-Pacific region. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. China urges the United States to abandon plans to transform and expand its nuclear weapons capability. Chinese experts regard the U.S. Defense Department's 2018 nuclear posture review as a more aggressive U.S. nuclear strategy. See this and other stories online at VOA 60. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, you may have watched part of it wherever you happen to be in Asia and around the world. The underdog Philadelphia Eagles defeated the New England Patriots 41-33 in Minneapolis, Minnesota to win the 52nd edition of the U.S. National Football League's annual Super Bowl championship. It was one of the most entertaining football games played, as both teams set a combined record of offensive yards for any NFL contest, let alone a Super Bowl. The win gave the Eagles, representing the National Football Conference, their first ever Super Bowl trophy. In two previous appearances in 1981 and 2005, they lost to the Oakland Raiders and New England. Eagles quarterback Nick Foles, who was a backup this season until star quarterback Carson Wentz suffered a season-ending knee injury in Week 14, was named the game's most valuable player. He threw for 3 touchdowns and 373 yards.
You never really know what it's going to be like when you're going to a Super Bowl. I've never been here before, so there are normal nerves. You got butterflies. I mean, it's a big game. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than this. So, but I felt good. I felt calm. I think the big thing that helped me was knowing that I didn't have to be Superman. I have amazing teammates, amazing coaches around me, and all I had to do was just go play as hard as I could and play for one another, play for those guys, and, you know, not look at the scoreboard, not look at the time, just go out there and play. Don't worry about it. And, you know, came away with a victory.
Foles nearly quit the game, but decided to keep playing after some soul-searching and consultations with his family.
Yeah, I mean, we talked a lot this last week about, you know, a couple years ago, there was a time where I was thinking about hanging up the cleats. And, you know, I think as people, you know, we deal with struggles. And that was, you know, a moment in my life where, you know, I thought about it and, you know, I prayed about it. And, you know, I'm grateful that I made the decision to come back here and play.
Patriots coach Bill Belichick has now been on the winning end 5 times and the losing end 3 times.
They're really proud of the way our team competed tonight. It wasn't, unfortunately, our best, but which it needs to be in this game against a great team like the Eagles. But proud of the way our players, coaches, everybody competed for 60 minutes. Just wasn't quite enough. We weren't able to perform at our best. Obviously, didn't do a good enough job coaching. Missed a lot of opportunities offensively in the first half. Didn't play good enough defense. Didn't play good enough in a kicking game. Just wasn't quite enough against a good team like Philadelphia. And give them credit. Coach Peterson, his staff, did an outstanding job. It's a great, highly competitive game. But in the end, we just couldn't quite make enough plays to come out on top tonight.
The Patriots were guided by future Hall of Fame head coach Bill Belichick and future Hall of Fame quarterback Tom Brady, who were seeking their second consecutive Vince Lombardi trophy and their 6th overall in Brady's 16 seasons with New England.
Yeah, we moved the ball quite a bit too. We just, we did a good job in the second half. First half, you know, we had a lot of yards. We just didn't have a lot of points. And that came back to kind of bite us in the end.
Tom Brady's been around in the NFL for a long time. He's 40 years old, but he says he has plans to return next year and try for a 7th title. Foles said he tried not to think of the implications of such a big game and focused instead on each play for the entire game.
You know, I was really staying in the moment. This is always the outcome, the goal. But I feel like if you put it on a pedestal, you start forgetting to do the little things, the preparation, the practice. You start forcing balls because you're trying to play at a level that, you know. So when this became reality was when we won the NFC Championship game, because that was what was staying in the moment. And I wasn't worrying about the next day. I was worrying about that moment. And that's what, you know, I did today, we did today. Just staying in this moment, doing everything you can in the moment to be successful, and the outcome was we were world champs.
As you might expect, with a first Super Bowl win in Philadelphia, the fans took to the streets with exuberant celebrations that at times called for police intervention. Early Monday, cleanup crews were brought in to clean up several broken windows and downed road signs in the city center. The Eagles' last NFL championship came in 1960. That was 7 years before the very first Super Bowl game. This news alert from VOA Asia. Sri Lanka is celebrating its 70th anniversary of Independence Day from British colonial rule. The president paid tribute to those who sacrificed their lives in achieving the country's freedom. VOA 60 has this story and more online. Also visit VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, there are an estimated 2.2 billion children in the world. And in a recent report, the United Nations says urgent action is needed to ensure that millions of them have some kind of future to look forward to. We hear more from VOA's Kevin Enix.
The United Nations estimates that there are 48 million children in the world affected by violence and conflict. But they've just presented the world with a plan for giving them some kind of future.
So UNICEF is launching its appeal. It will be an appeal for $3.6 billion, covering a crisis situation in 51 countries and covering needs that UNICEF intends to meet for 82 million people, including 48 million children.
UN officials say lengthy conflicts in the Middle East and Africa are where children need the most help.
And this goes around the whole world. Crisis, the crisis that has the highest number is around the Syrian refugees in neighboring countries, and then Syria, Yemen, and many other crises.
Officials say the problem is being made worse by a new trend in warfare to target the institutions that help children stay healthy and get ahead.
Unfortunately, what we see is a bit of a new norm around attacks on schools, on hospitals, on health facilities in general, on water facilities that shouldn't be acceptable. It's just not acceptable to attack children facilities, not acceptable to recruit children, and not acceptable to detain children in those situations. And this is a worrying trend.
The relatively new nation of South Sudan is one of the hardest hit. And officials there say they are trying to save an entire generation of children lost to conflict.
So currently we're doing a demobilization exercise in the south of Sudan in a place called Yambio, where we hope to get at least 580 children out of the military and back to school, back to their communities. Then we'll go to the north of Sudan and hopefully between two sites in the north of Sudan get another 400 out of the military. We're able to reintegrate these children back, put them back into school and make them productive members of the society.
UN officials say some of the aid money will go towards getting the estimated 25 million conflict area children who are not in schools back in the classroom. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Projecting three-dimensional images in thin air called holography moved from science fiction to reality a long time ago. But this type of graphic display is not in wide use because of the required equipment, which is still expensive. Scientists at the Brigham Young University have discovered a cheaper method of holography using particles floating in the air. VOA's George Pudich floats details through the airwaves.
This image of a small butterfly fluttering its wings above a finger is called a volumetric image. Creator Daniel Smalley says it is in fact a tiny speck of cellulose kept suspended in a so-called photophoretic trap.
While it's trapped, laser light will hit that particle and that laser light will scatter in all directions, and then everybody looking toward the particle will see those colors, that scattered light.
Like movies and television, volumetric images rely on persistence of vision, or the fact that human eye cannot perceive the gaps between images projected in rapid succession. Smalley says this is different from holographic images that can be seen only from a certain number of angles.
We can see it from the front, we can see it from the back, and in reality we can see it from almost any angle. And that separates it from technologies like holograms can only be seen from a certain range of angles.
Researchers say multiplying the light beams may lead to larger projections that could one day be used in both science and entertainment. George Pudich, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as streaming each and every day at VOA Asia Facebook and on our website at voanews.com. If you happen to be out and about, you'll also find us on the radio in various places around Asia, including Thailand. Chiang Mai University Radio FM 100 in Chiang Mai University carries our program. We thank everyone there who was listening today. Our thanks always go out to Director Tracy Carter, our engineer Jimmy Cook, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.